This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss media coverage of abortion and reproductive rights. Abortion has become a key issue in this year's election. The majority of Americans support the right to an abortion. So how are the media covering public support for abortion post-Dobbs? Abortion is now banned in 14 Republican-controlled states and another 8 in almost all cases. Abortion rights will be on the ballot in 10 states, including Florida, a state with an extreme 6-week ban, which is essentially a total ban. A majority of Florida voters say they back a ballot measure to enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution, according to new polling released today by The Hill and Emerson College Polling. Rolling Stone's Andrew Perez reports that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and the Heritage Foundation are teaming up to kill the Florida abortion rights measure. Donald Trump has once again flip-flopped on whether he supports the measure because the majority of the country support abortion rights. Most people identify as pro-choice post-Dobbs. Joining us are two guests. Garnet Henderson is a senior reporter covering reproductive health and abortion access for the Rewire News Group, the only national publication exclusively dedicated to reporting on reproductive and sexual health rights and justice. Garnet Henderson is the creator, producer, and host of Access, a podcast about abortion. Garnet's latest pieces are about the result of national abortion financial assistance cuts. Marcy Haverda, president of the Wild West Access Fund of Nevada, said, quote, "July was hell. I don't have any other way of putting it. July was pure hell." Another piece is about the Texas Department of Public Safety no longer allowing trans Texans to change the gender markers on their driver's licenses or state ID cards. Hi, Garnet. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by Alana Vagianos, a senior national reporter at HuffPost. Her latest pieces are about Donald Trump suggesting he will support Florida's pro-choice amendment and then his campaign immediately backtracking. She also reports on the state of Florida waging a war on its abortion clinics. In the 2 months after Florida's ban went into effect, the state saw a 575% increase in people looking to travel out of state for care. That is according to the National Abortion Federation. Hi, Alana. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
I also should say you're out with a brand new piece today called Florida's Nonpartisan Health Agency Spreads Partisan Lies About the Abortion Rights Ballot Measure. So let's begin with a big question, but really an important question, given that it's been 2 years since the Dobbs decision, and so many brave women across the country have been sharing harrowing stories about how they've been affected by Republican abortion bans. Alana, what is your overall assessment of major media coverage about abortion?
That's a big question. That's a good question. I think it's always great when more people are paying attention to what's going on within the abortion landscape. I think the two things that I would say are that, you know, larger national organizations tend to cover the same type of person who gets an abortion, and that's normally a white, hetero, cis woman who had a wanted pregnancy and unfortunately miscarried and wasn't able to get the necessary miscarriage care that she needed. And while those stories are extremely important and should be covered, I think it's really critical that we cover more people who get abortions, and we talk about the different types of abortion stories that are out there. So we better understand that, you know, this touches people of all different walks of life. And then the second thing that I would say, and Garnet has done some amazing coverage about this, is that covering lack of funding for abortion funds, which are actually the only groups that fund abortions right now on the ground. Those would be my 2 points, but I'll pass it over to Garnet as well.
Yeah, and Garnet, you have a really important piece about funding, which we'll talk about during today's segment. What are your overall thoughts of media coverage of these issues?
Yeah, I agree with Alana, everything Alana just said completely. And what I'll add to it is that I think from a lot of large mainstream media outlets, there's a persistent framing of abortion as a very controversial subject upon which there is a lot of disagreement. And while that is true when we look at what elected officials may say about abortion, when we look at what Americans think, as you mentioned when you were introducing us, this is actually one of the subjects on which Americans most agree. A majority of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. That's actually been true since before Roe was overturned, and it has become more true with every passing month over the last 2 years. And so I think it's really time for those mainstream outlets to reconsider always relying on that framing and treating abortion as something where there are two equal and opposing sides that they need to present with equal weight, because that simply is not true.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Garnett, because at some outlets, I'm still hearing that abortion is one of the most divisive issues of our time.
Exactly. And we know it's not true. And you know, that's true even in states that we consider quite conservative. For example, Kansas was the first state to have an abortion-related ballot measure on the ballot after Roe was overturned, and voters turned out in huge numbers to vote against an anti-abortion ballot measure. So they voted in favor of abortion rights in a quote-unquote red state. And, you know, there are a lot of people in Florida who may be showing up in this election to vote in favor of abortion rights and for Donald Trump, which I think, again, a lot of people look at and they say, that's so confusing. How is it possible? But it's because on that issue, people really do agree.
So can you talk more about that? Because that's been getting a little more coverage, is why are people voting for these abortion rights ballot measures, but then voting for the same Republicans who are ensuring that there are abortion bans in those states?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it's something that I've seen a lot and something that abortion providers remark on a lot when I interview them, is what they'll say to me is, you know, a lot of people really don't know what's going on with abortion rights in their state until they need an abortion or someone they love needs an abortion. So I think there were a lot of people who were living in states where abortion law was already very restrictive before Roe was overturned, and not all of them were really aware of that. And now there has been a lot more media coverage of abortion bans. So I think the kind of general level of awareness is probably higher overall because of that constant drumbeat of media coverage. So I think what we're seeing now is more of a disconnect where politicians are not always communicating clearly with people on policy and issues. You know, I think that a lot of Republicans have made a very conscious decision to distance themselves from anti-abortion policies in this election, Donald Trump himself chief among those. And I think a lot of Democrats are also not being very clear in their communication with voters in terms of making the connection of how these Republican elected officials or candidates, in many cases, had a direct hand in these anti-abortion policies. I think the connection is really missing in a lot of cases there.
Alana, what are your thoughts on this? Because you wrote about this exact issue. Donald Trump claimed he supported in vitro fertilization earlier this year when an Alabama Supreme Court case effectively criminalized IVF. It was only after national outrage over the ruling that he spoke up in support of IVF, trying to distance himself from anti-abortion activists in his party who are anti-IVF. And then he's making this promise to make IVF free to any person if elected, and yet he has deep ties to the anti-IVF movement. I mean, this is kind of head spinning, but this just speaks to the importance of media coverage of these issues.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to watch Trump waffle on this position. I think that, and I think we've seen this largely in the past 2 years, especially since abortion rights amendments have been so popular, and all of them have been successful when put in front of voters. I think Trump realizes that being anti-abortion is not popular, as Garnett was talking about, and he's now trying to find the correct place for him within his own party that, you know, he keeps trying to distance himself from Project 2025, which is basically a, you know, extreme wish list for his, you know, possible next presidency, and included within it are a ton of anti-abortion policies policy proposals that include, you know, possibly banning IVF and threatening contraception, as well as either enforcing the Comstock Act, which would be a backdoor national abortion ban, or simply enacting a national abortion ban. And yet he continues to waffle on these issues. I mean, you can also kind of tell that he doesn't really have a lot of information about abortion, about what IVF is. I mean, you know, when he pledged that the government will pay for fertility treatments, one round of fertility treatment can cost up to $30,000 per cycle. That was obviously not very well thought out. Also, Democrats have introduced several pieces of legislation that would cover IVF and protect IVF that his own party have time and time again voted against. So it's interesting to see where he's at, and as he kind of continues to flip-flop on this, especially with the Florida amendment and how he, you know, initially signaled that he would vote for the pro-choice amendment in support of abortion rights and restoring access until fetal viability in Florida. His campaign very quickly backtracked the next day, and then he came out the day after that saying he will vote no on that amendment. I'm looking forward to the presidential debate on Tuesday to see if moderators will push him to clarify his stance on abortion and IVF.
Yes. So given that you both extensively write about this, what would you like the moderators to ask on Tuesday night? Alana?
Well, I would like to ask, I would hope to see that they ask him about actual policy proposals, because far too often he and a lot of Republicans and anti-abortion advocates simply stick to the talking point of abortion later in pregnancy, or a phrase that is actually not scientifically correct that we hear a lot, which is late term abortion, and talking about quote unquote incomplete abortions. Or, I mean, my favorite is when he says that blue states allow newborns to be murdered after they're recently born, which is murder, so that's already illegal. But I hope that moderators ask for specific policies that he would support when it comes to abortion, and really stick to the points that are based in scientific evidence when it comes to abortion care.
A quick question before we ask Garnett to jump in. Why does he constantly say that abortion happens after a child is born? Where is this coming from? And why aren't more people speaking out about this? Or are they?
So I think that abortion later in pregnancy is a very easy topic for Republicans and anti-abortion advocates to use as rhetoric and fodder to make people scared.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I phrased that wrong. He's talking about murder after a child is born, in addition to the late term. But what is with this murder after a child is born that he keeps repeating?
Well, there's been several pieces of legislation in the Senate and the House on federal levels that talk about being born alive. So abortions that are botched, or abortions that are not completed, and then the fetus or infant is born alive, which that does not happen. That is not based in a type of factual evidence-based research. But that is where that comes from. So it's been used for decades as a talking point for Republicans. And it is because abortion later in pregnancy is so stigmatized, and so people don't want to talk about it, including Democrats. And so for so often, that rhetoric specifically has gone unchecked, because no one wants to talk about abortion later in pregnancy, even if it's wanted or needed, even if it's basic healthcare for many people.
Alana Vagianos is senior national reporter at HuffPost. Garnett Henderson is senior reporter at the Rewire News Group and creator, producer, and host of Access, a podcast about abortion. We're going to play a quick clip from Donald Trump, just because he's all over the map on abortion. And I think it's really important to even go back a few years just to remember what he has said. And then we will get Garnett to respond. Here is Donald Trump.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
On abortion, I will bring it up. We did a great thing. We got rid of, we did something that for for 52 years people have wanted to do. They wanted to get rid of Roe v. Wade.
We broke Roe v. Wade, and we did something that nobody thought was possible.
A lot of things were done with Roe by killing it. Number one, we brought it back to the States.
Of course, there were justices to the Supreme Court that made that possible.
They did.
Yeah.
And I want to thank the six Supreme Court justices, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, and Amy Coney Barrett for the wisdom and courage they showed on this long-term, very contentious issue.
So related to this is the whole issue of contraceptives. Do you support any restrictions on a person's right to contraception?
Well, we're looking at that, and I'm going to have a policy on that very shortly. And I think it's something that you'll find interesting. And it's another issue that's very interesting. But you will find it, I think, very smart. I think it's a smart decision. But we'll be releasing it very soon.
Running that say that you would support certain states with bans monitoring a woman's pregnancy.
Well, that would be up to the states. Again, they will make a decision as to how they do it.
Would you veto a federal abortion ban?
I'm not going to have to think about it because it's working out so well right now.
Especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade.
So there's a compilation of Donald Trump talking about abortion and the extreme bans that are now on the books across the country in 14 Republican-controlled states and another 8 in almost all cases. Garnett, what are your thoughts about media coverage of this? Because what I see is, you know, Meet the Press trying to get a soundbite out of J.D. Vance. Will Donald Trump sign a national ban? And he says no. And this is from J.D. Vance, who a few years ago said he would like abortion to be illegal across the country. So it's almost like they're trying to get these gotcha moments. But what about the big picture? That the guy, I mean, his Supreme Court justices overturned Roe.
Exactly. As Alana said earlier, that's why I think it's so important to ask about actual policies and not just look for that yes or no soundbite answer, because I think it's clear that Donald Trump really knows very little about abortion, and he's going to say whatever he feels is politically expedient. Some of those earlier clips, I think, were from the 2016 campaign, which seems so long ago now, but he was much more upfront at that time about saying that he believed abortion should be illegal. He believed in punishment for a pregnant person who has an abortion or tries to get one. And then he, you know, appointed justices who had said that they would overturn Roe, and they did. And I think now a lot of reporters are not really pressing him on that issue, because what he's saying now about abortion in a lot of cases is really inconsistent with his past actions. And this is a man who has already been president. So we actually don't have to speculate about what he would do if he were president, because we know. And we also know that this is someone who's very comfortable with lying. And he's even said that himself several times on the campaign trail. He said something to the effect of, well, you have to win elections. So he's even sort of winked at voters saying, you know, don't worry, I'm not telling the truth right now. And so I do think it's really important to press him, and really to press any politician, on what they actually would do, what policies they would actually enact if elected.
And how this is playing out on the ground, I really appreciated what Alana said earlier about how the stories that we are hearing, and I'm so glad we're hearing them, but they're from mostly white women who wanted their children. And that's very important. But the stories that we're not hearing are about how these bans are affecting the most vulnerable people in this society. NBC has a really important piece out called States with Strictest Abortion Laws Offer the Least Support for Women and Their Families. So we know that these Republican-controlled states barely have a social safety net. And in the piece, Caitlin Myers, a professor at Middlebury College, was quoted, and she said, "The minority of people are trapped by the bans. Yes, a lot of people are able to travel, but a lot of people cannot order pills online or travel to have an abortion in another state. They are disproportionately the poorest and most vulnerable of an already largely poor and vulnerable group of people who are seeking abortion. So Garnett, as we are talking, so many poor women and people, children, who cannot afford a child are being forced to have a child because they either don't have access to the pills or they cannot travel. We just don't hear about them as much as we should.
That's absolutely right. We know that people who have abortions in the United States are more likely to be low income, they're more likely to be young, they're more likely to be people of color, and more than half of them already have children. So these are people who already have the least access to healthcare of anyone in our society. And often that's why they end up having unintended pregnancies, is because of that initial lack of access to healthcare. And then, as you said, they don't have the supports in place that they would need in order to parent if that is what they wanted. And really, most abortions happen because someone simply does not want to be or can't be pregnant at this time. And it's really important to be willing to talk about that, because those abortions that happen in emergency situations with wanted pregnancies are actually quite a small minority of abortions. And I'm glad that you mentioned children as well, because the younger a person is, the more likely they are to discover their pregnancy later on. And so, again, there's so much focus on abortions that happen later in pregnancy with desired pregnancies because of some kind of a serious medical issue. But a lot of the people in the United States who need the abortions that are hardest to access, which are abortions later in pregnancy, are children who've discovered that they are pregnant in the second trimester or even later than that. And I think it's really important, again, to be willing to speak about that honestly, because they're the people that are most harmed by abortion bans. And they're also the people that are most harmed by some of these funding cuts, because abortions later in pregnancy are also the most expensive abortions.
Yes, exactly. I keep thinking about the children. Once in a while, we'll get a horrible headline about a child who was raped and has no choice but to have the child, a child having a child. But we're just not seeing enough stories about this. Alana, you wrote a story that I think about a lot, about domestic violence. That's another angle that I think deserves so much more attention. In our remaining 2 minutes, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy that you brought up the intimate partner violence and how it overlaps with abortion bans. The leading cause of death for pregnant and postpartum women is actually homicide by an intimate partner. So that outpaces things like sepsis or, blood loss, like during birth. So the idea that the more states ban and restrict abortion, I spoke to several domestic violence shelters and domestic violence advocates, specifically within Texas, because Texas actually restricted abortion nearly a year before Roe v. Wade actually fell. So they have been living in a post-Roe world for a year longer. And several of the shelters and staff that I spoke with said that they have been seeing an increase of women and victims and survivors coming in who are pregnant. And we've seen more stories of where domestic violence is definitely part of the conversation when talking about women who are not able to get to access abortion or have to travel to get an abortion. So I think that's a very extremely important issue. It's one that's near and dear to my heart. And unfortunately, I think we're going to see an increase in reports of domestic violence as abortion bans continue in these states.
Alana Vagianos is a senior national reporter at HuffPost. Garnett Henderson is a reporter for the Rewire News Group and creator, producer, and host of Access, a podcast about abortion. Alana and Garnett, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks again for having me.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and David Latulipe for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.